Hello, welcome to Bite Size Bible. I'm Laura Bentley, the associate pastor at Westminster Presbyterian Church. That's in Upper St. Clair, PA. And Faith is with me. Faith, you want to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Faith Kemmler, and I'm the director of Children's and Family Ministry here at Westminster.
And we are sort of stumbling into a mini-series on the beginning of Genesis. We got asked by a couple of friends here at the church that listened to this if we're going to do chapter by chapter through the Old Testament, and we're not.
No.
That's not our plan. But just to give you kind of a where we're going with this over the next couple of weeks, we're planning to talk about the start of the second creation story, or really like the creation part of the second story in Genesis. And then the week after, talk a bit about why there would be two of these stories included and how we think about reading differing accounts of things that are in the Bible, because this is not the only time that happens. And then I think after that, we're going to try to take on Genesis 3 a bit, which is often in our Presbyterian tradition where people start. We have the tendency, at least in the past, to really begin with what's called the fall and with human sin. And so we're going to talk a bit about that, and then we'll see what happens after that. So again, I say this every time, but if you have questions and things that you think be interesting for us to talk about, or if you want to physically come to us and bring something to talk about, totally open to that. So you can find our emails on the church website and reach out. So Faith.
Yes.
Genesis chapter 2. We get a second creation story. For those that are not holding a Bible in their hands right now or don't want to go to the app on a phone, can you give us just like a too long didn't read of the second story, the second creation story in Genesis?
Yes. So the second creation story starts a couple of verses into Genesis 2. And it starts that God had created the heavens and the earth, but there was nothing yet. There were no plants, no animals, no people, anything like that. And God creates human, and God plants a garden, and God puts human in the garden to take care of it and to keep it. And after a while, God decides that the human needs a helper and a companion. And so God begins creating animals, and the human gets to name them and decide, are they sufficient as a helper? And
which, honestly, I think is one of the most fun stories
in scripture. Too. Yes, like coming up with all of these animal names, that's so fun.
Yeah, which I guess is kind of what like scientists do in a way. Like there True. Is a job that you get to do this sometimes, but yeah, getting to do it like all in a row.
Yes. And so none of them are good enough helpers, and then
that's so harsh. None of them are good enough. The hippo wasn't a good enough helper to Adam.
No,
like he couldn't till the ground. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. You're good. So God takes human and puts them to sleep and turns this single human into two humans, and then that those two humans are sufficient companions and helpers for each other. And so God says, now take care of this garden and take care of these things. And that's really like Genesis 2 in a nutshell.
Yeah. I doubt many people have heard the translation of human. So I think we should dive into that first, because
yes.
It's an important distinction from what we have in, at least like my English translation that I have in front of me, says that God created man,
mm-hmm.
and then uses man over and over and over again until you get to the end of the chapter and the Lord takes a rib from the man and makes a woman and brings her to the man. So I'm sorry, I'm putting you on the spot on this.
No,
but we can go back and forth a little bit. Why did you use human instead of man?
Yeah. So I haven't taken my languages yet. You can talk to Bentley for
I have,
actual...
so I'll nod my head along. You pretend like I'm nodding.
But I'm not making this up either, so Bentley can affirm that. But that...
And actual Hebrew scholars, too. I'll point away from myself
yes.
on that.
So even though in our English translations it uses the word man, it actually in Hebrew is human, right?
Yeah, like, it's where we get the name Adam is Adam.
Adam.
And it, I mean,
From the earth?
Yeah, it means, like, from the earth, but, like, my favorite translation is it's a dust person or dirt person. We're all dirt people.
Yes. Kinda, which, like, God, it said that God formed the human, and so, like, we use this all the time for, like, Ash Wednesday and other things, like, from dust you came to dust you shall return. Mm-hmm. God scooped up from the earth and molded into this thing, and it's human. And it's not until after, when God is trying to find a companion for this human and puts them asleep, that then the gender binary as we look at it is introduced into this story. But we can look at it as this one human has been taken and split in half. It is not that there was a man, and we like to say God took a rib from the man, but God took a bit out of this human side and made two humans that, because they were once one, means they are complementary to each other and rightful companions and helpers for each other.
Yeah. And it means more broadly that we need one another, and that we need in some way this diversity that God created out of sameness. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, the core of the human story. And I think that's an important thing. Like, this this creation story is not as, like, outwardly poetic as the first one, which has this, like, repetition, and it very much is written as a poem. And this one is written more as a story that you would read maybe in a history book, but it's more like what you would read in, like, a children's mm-hmm. story, and it's closer to other myths. Again, like, we talked about this before, that doesn't mean it's untrue. It's true in the sense of this is what it looked like for God to make humanity, and it brings us to a deeper truth about who we are and who God is. We'll get in later, once we're in chapter 3, other humans exist at this point. And so it's not, my kids the other day, my 5-year-old, asked me who the first person was. And as a pastor, you'd think I could give this really easy answer of, like, well, first person was Adam and then came Eve, but it's, even in scripture, reading it in a plain text way, that's not quite what's going on, because other humans exist, but this story tells about how God creates from the earth and from divine breath humanity, and then out of humanity as a unified, thing, as a unified creation, to repeat a word, that we are split into individuals, and that we need partnership and we need community. It's not good for us to be alone.
Yeah. And all of the animals that came before that, also important, also a part of the picture, but the realization that, like, our sufficient, like, helper was from our same species and was taking the same species. Like, my dog is still my helper and I love her dearly, but this full, complete community is from this same species relationship that we have with other humans.
I really wish we had one of those soundboards to do, like, a sound every time there's a new Hebrew word we should bring up. Helper is another one that gets weird in how we translate and what we assume it means. And it's been the idea that woman is a helper to man in this story, and our translation has led to centuries of subjugation of women that it did not need to lead to. And the word itself, Ezer in Hebrew, is used most often in the Old Testament for God helping humanity, which I don't think we would put God in a subjugated role to humanity when we use it that way. And so, like, in the NRSV that we usually use in church, it talks about, like, that this is a helper and a partner for Adam. It gets at that a little bit more. But the idea here is that there needed to be a companion that could be an equal, that they could share the burden of life together. And at this point, I guess, like, in Eden, we don't think of there being a burden, but there's still work. So maybe I should change burden to work, that, like, Adam, human, was created to toil and work the land, and not in a negative way, but that this was the purpose, that in God's creation, humans would continue to create and produce, and carry on the work of God. And that's like the divine breath in us and the earth in us. Those things stay connected.
And that's a similarity with the first creation story we have, because God creates human and says, be fruitful and multiply and have dominion over all of the other things I created. And so we see it in this one, because as soon as God creates human, God then says, now take care of this garden that I'm planting too. And so in both of these stories, we get this account of like, hey, I made you and I made this, and have dominion and take care and be helpers together in it and for it and with it.
Mm-hmm. Which is also like, our translations get so tricky, because dominion we think about as being like not just responsibility, or the very Christian word that we use of stewardship, but like dominance. And that's not really what it's meant to be. It's meant to be that you have been placed in a position of care, that you're meant to do this work that God kind of started. And that's continues to be our call. There is so much more here. I'm realizing We've already talked for like a while. I think that you'd said that the first story is the one you've heard most often.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second story is the one I've heard the most often. And I feel like because it begins to have characters that we can get to know and that we can relate to, it's sometimes the easier story to tell. But like, I think I've heard it the most often in making sure people stay in their place and in their lane. I've heard this story be used around making sure people's gender appears how we have, you know, defined as normal. I think that it's been used to keep couples who are gay from marrying one another, because in this binary that we read at the end, people have taken that to mean that type of marriage partnership can only be man and woman as we have it. And it's been, like I said, used for generations to say that women need to be in a subservient place to men. I don't think it says any of that. At this point, there's a like huge amount of scholarship that leans in that direction as well. And I know like in a more conservative direction, there are folks that produce scholarship on that too, but I think that there's a very good case from the Hebrew of this, that this story was not meant to be one that puts people in a particular lane that they are not allowed to get out of, or a box that they can't be moved out of, or in a binary state, but instead it invites us to find our common humanity and the need for partnership and help as God shows up to help us in our relationships to one another. And that's what it's supposed to be getting at, as like these archetypes of Adam and I'm forgetting the one that we translate woman, Ishne maybe, but yeah, that those two kind of original human archetypes are ones that we can find within ourselves. Faith, do you have anything else?
I don't think so, because I was just going to, as you were talking, I was going to throw at you, so if it's not for us to have dominance and gender binary, what is it? But you answered my question. It's relationship, and it boils down to relationship and connection, and that is what is happening from the beginning. I am going to throw in just the little fun fact that I learned earlier when I was reading my commentaries, that we usually, and this goes back to last week's Genesis 1, like we start in the beginning, but the word, the Hebrew word there can be translated a lot of ways, and so one of the commentaries that I listened to presented it as, this is the beginning of God's creating. Mm-hmm. And so this is like, the Bible starts with God's creating, but this story isn't the end of God's creating. So I'll leave you with that.
That's really good. So we did last week a what you're learning in seminary. It seems as though this week you're learning the same thing in seminary. So before we started recording, we were talking about what Christian culture Bible nerds we were as youth. And so, Faith, I'm going to make you go first because I'm the one talking right now. What are your credentials at a young age to be, like, how was the trajectory to Bible podcast and working at a church showing up in your DNA from early on?
I mean, from birth, really. Like, I remember this because my parents had like a baptism plaque that hung in my room, like above my light switch, that I'd see every day when I left my room. And I was baptized at exactly a month old, which like is pretty young and early. And barely have missed a Sunday of church since. But we were talking, Bentley and I were talking earlier about like some of the things in high school, and I was the leader of prayer group in high school. I only led CU at the pool twice because the first 2 years someone else was the leader of prayer group and they were the ones leading it. Another piece I'll throw in there is that we switched youth groups when I was in high school, and I went on a retreat with my brand new youth group like 3 weeks into having gone to youth group there because I just wanted to go on a retreat even though I didn't know anyone. One of my favorites actually is that I went to General Assembly as a young adult advisory delegate.
That actually, that's the Presbyterian trump card.
At the age of 17 too. So like, you know, I guess it really, I've been in denial over some of it, but I guess it's been there the whole time.
I ran into somebody that went with you to General Assembly when I was at a continuing ed event last week that I was supposed to tell you that they, one, said hi, and two, that you should come to the next continuing ed event because why would I be there and not bring faith? But yeah, this started because we were talking about Genesis, and I was remembering in high school at one point our Christian Fellowship Club had someone come in and try to merge the two creation stories and tell us the ways that like this is all actually one story with, they talked about it as no contradictions. I just don't, we'll get into this more next time, but I don't think contradiction is the right way to look at there being two accounts of something. But and their merger of it was, I would say, theologically bonkers. Now at the time I was just looking around like, is this what other people think? But at that point, I was the president of our Christian Fellowship Club, and so I had responsibility of what was being said during this, during that meeting. And yeah, I've got.
How many times did you lead CU at the poll?
I don't know. See, here's the thing. I have such a terrible memory. I went to it every year of high school. I am sure I led stuff for it multiple times. And then once I was a youth pastor, I was at it, and my students led it.
And here we are.
I did all the things. There's also a picture of me, like, in my parents' house with my third grade Bible. It's great.
Have a great week, everybody.
Yep, we'll get you next time.